Hey there, it's your happy Asian woman host, Alice Chen. Do you know any teens who are feeling overwhelmed with the college admissions process? If so, send them my way. I run Bright Story Admission Consulting, a boutique company that focuses on college application essays. A little about me. I'm a Stanford grad, a professional journalist, and I also coach other essay coaches. I love teaching people how to write, and I'm so thrilled when my students get into schools that they love, like Stanford, MIT, and the UCs. Learn more about my company at brightstory.info. Welcome to Happy Asian Woman, a show to help Asian American women find more joy in love, work, and life. I'm your host, Alice Chen, a professional journalist and entrepreneur. I've also been married for almost 15 years, and I'm the mother of two young girls. If you want to build more community, come join our supportive Facebook group. The link's on my website, www.happyasianwoman.com. Thanks for joining us. If you missed the last episode, be sure to tune in as we talked about money and what to look for in a husband, how our career and financial priorities changed after we got married and had kids, and how to reconcile money with our faith. Let's listen in to part two.
I think that, I have my non-negotiables, which is coffee. and that's pretty much it. Like I think that it's important to make sure that you carve out what's important for you. Yeah. So if it's coffee, if it's getting a massage, if it's, I don't know, buying a book, like going to the movies pre-COVID, you know, whatever it is, like, you need to keep yourself and your mind healthy as well. And if that's what you need, then that's what you need. And as a stay-at-home mom, like, you know, like that goes back to our point earlier, which was like, we did in a way, like, make some sacrifices so that our husbands could have their careers.
Right.
And, you know, being a stay-at-home mom is a really, really tough job. It is the toughest job I've ever had in my life.
Yes.
And if I needed to spend the $5 on overpriced Starbucks coffee, I'm going to spend the $5 on overpriced Starbucks coffee. You know, and that it is what it is. And I don't feel guilty about it. So I think you just, you know, and it goes to like, it's all about levels, you know, like that was my treat, but for other people, if it's, you know, splurging hundreds of thousands of dollars on shopping when they only make like $20,000, like that might not be healthy, but for me, but you know, I think it's about finding that balance between like, what is like, what's a really good outlet for you and self-care, you know, and versus like what's appropriate for your financial, like your family's financial situation.
Yeah. And I also had a thought popped into my mind, which was have a budget. Like you had talked about earlier, budgeting, like if you budgeted for self-care and the splurges and stuff, I do think that that's really important. And then another thought I had was like, maybe I should spend money like my husband spends money, because it's all both of ours, right? So if he doesn't have a problem buying this type of thing, why am I? And that would let me, and that would help me support him in his buying decisions as well. Because when I don't spend on myself, then when he spends, I'm like, why are you spending that? Right? So, all right. So how did you get interested in money and personal finance?
I think I've just always kind of, I kind of started early. Like I guess my mom kind of instilled a really good, I guess, perspective on investing pretty early on. And then, I went to college. I studied, law and commerce, which is like kind of a business degree at the time. And then I got a job at one of the big four accounting firms. And, you know, after I got my first paycheck, which wasn't very much, I started investing in the stock market at around 20. Mm-hmm. And I think for me personally, like it's never been like a big aha moment. It's something that was kind of, I guess, nurtured in me, and my career kind of lent itself to that as well. So yeah, that's how I got invested, interested, I guess, in personal finance. And how about you, Alice?
I would say, as I mentioned,
My dad mostly did the investing for me, probably in my 20s, but my sister actually started investing her own money. She read a bunch of books and she shared the information with me. And that's how I got more interested in it. She does a lot of the research. I take her recommendations. I actually do read personal finance books. And now that I'm running my own business, I've read up on a lot more about negotiation, pricing, you know, nice. And finance. And I love it. It's really interesting, actually. There's so much psychology behind money and pricing and negotiation and things like that. So I find it very fascinating, actually.
It's definitely interesting.
It is. It's fascinating. So you work in finance specifically insolvency and restructuring. So what is that exactly in layman's terms? And do you apply anything from your job in your own personal finance? And if so, what? And then part four of the question is also, what have you learned about money from running your own consulting business?
So that's a really good question. So I work in restructuring, and what that is I help companies who are facing bankruptcy or who are in bankruptcy kind of work through that process. So I tend to work with businesses and companies that struggle with money, that have made some very, very poor financial decisions, or because of the financial market or the economy, they are struggling. And so I have worked in that for, you know, in Australia and also in America. And it's a really, really interesting career. And it can be very, very, very intense. But at the same time, it's interesting. And unfortunately, it's one that really impacts a lot of people as well. When you are kind of in that business, because you are having to make really tough decisions, that kind of affect all different kind of facets of a business. And so, like, as Alice has alluded to, I kind of have my own consulting business. So I, as a result of being a stay-at-home mom, I now run a consulting business and I work from home. I consult to restructuring firms who, I guess, need additional hands and need help with providing some services. And I provide my services to clients. And I also do training for restructuring firms as well. So I ran a training to Sydney last week. Wow. So that was really fun. So that was interesting with the time zones, but definitely fun. So what have I learned as a small business owner? So I'm actually really, really new to the business owner game. Mm-hmm. Unlike Alice, who has a lot more experience than me. I think what I've learned is just know what your parameters are and know what you're all about. I think mm-hmm. that it's important to know what you want out of your business, and what your goals are. Is it to make lots of money? Is it to have a career that allows you to have flexibility, and things like that? And also, you know, understand, I guess from yourself, like, what kind of salary expectations do you have? Like, and are they compatible? So one of my biggest challenges is that, I want to work from home and I don't want to travel. Mm-hmm. And my last job, I was on the road 100% of my time. Mm-hmm. So that's going to affect, you know, in terms of like what kind of clients and what kind of jobs that you might be able to take on. But is that okay with you? And I think it's thinking through the different elements of a business, and trying to understand, like, is that kind of part of your goals as well? Like, does that help you achieve your goals? And is that going to make you happy? Mm-hmm. And like not being scared to say no to people. I think it's part of maybe being Asian and female that makes us feel scared of negotiating. But I think that, you know, sometimes you just have to stand up for yourself, because if you don't advocate for yourself, then no one else will.
Yeah.
There's just some of the things that I've learned about running a small business. And, you know, it is really hard at the very beginning, but I think that, you know, it's also an opportunity for me, because I'm in a small town. I don't have many opportunities in this town to do the work that I enjoy, but the consulting business that I have now allows me to do really interesting work, on really I guess, on a really good timetable that kind of fits my schedule right now.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yep. And how about you, Alice? As a small business owner, what have you learned about money?
Oh my gosh, that could probably be a whole nother episode, and maybe we'll do our other episode on consulting. I think it's been really interesting. I would say that one of the first things I learned, especially back when I was doing more corporate writing for companies like Apple or Kraft or things like that, I realized that depending on the company, there can actually be like a very large budget differential for your rate. And so just one example I like to give was, there was this smaller tech company that called me up because they liked my resume, and I was chatting with the CEO and he asked me what my rate was. And I think he said he paid their current freelance writer this rate that I thought was extremely low for someone without benefits and things like that, and not guaranteed 40 hours a week. So I was pretty insulted that he said that. And then I named a rate that was 3 times higher than that. And he was just like, oh, well, I guess our current writer is just giving us a really good rate. And then we sort of left it at that, where I was not interested and, you know, frankly insulted by the rate he offered. And then the head marketing guy came back a few weeks later and he's like, oh, I was on vacation, you know, like the CEO, sorry you had to like go through that. And he goes, how about this? And it was like more in the middle, and it was at least double what the other writer was being paid. And so I'm like, huh, you know, they have a pretty large budget and flexibility. So I think when in doubt, try to go in high, depending on your credentials, your availability and things like that, because companies have flexibility. So that was a huge thing that I learned, that negotiation is also really important and don't be afraid to do it. And I think another thing I've learned is that it's really important to charge what you're worth, because I think when I was really young and starting out, I was willing to take a lower rate. And I feel like over the years, as my experience and expertise has grown, and as I've gotten busier, and I've raised my rate, I actually feel like I get a lot more respect from my clients. They take me more seriously. They take my input much more seriously now that I feel like I'm a bit more at market rate. And so I think those are the two things. Don't undervalue yourself and don't be afraid to negotiate. So.
No, they're really, really, really important lessons and really important things to learn for sure.
Yeah. So, all right. So, what are you investing in these days, Daisy?
That's a really good question. So I am looking at some property, specifically in the Austin market. My husband and I, we live close to Austin, and we really feel like that could be one of the areas that might have growth. I think for me personally, I'm a bit uncertain as to what 2021 and 2022 is going to look like in terms of economic outlook. The unemployment rate seems to be going up and up and up, and a lot of people are really suffering. A lot of people aren't making their rent payments. A lot of landlords aren't paying their mortgages. And so for us, that one sector seems to be one that we feel comfortable investing in right now.
Wait, but you said you thought there would be a lot of uncertainty. So why do you think
That's a really good question. So I think that we think that there's a lot of, so when we invest, my husband and I, we don't look at, you kind of have to look at everything. So like there's the stock market, there's real estate. And then you look at real estate and then you go, well, there's different areas you can invest in. For example, you can invest in the Bay Area. You can invest in Los Angeles. You can invest in New York. You can invest invest in my town here. So we are generally pessimistic on the outlook of, for example, like the Bay Area.
Unfortunately.
And that's really a function of the fact that a lot of the companies in the Bay Area are moving out because they are struggling to operate with the high taxes in the area.
Yeah.
And so with that, on the flip side of that, Austin seems to be the biggest beneficiary of that. So Tesla's just recently, Tesla's in the process of building a plant out there. Oracle's just announced they're moving their headquarters out there. Google's got premises out there. Facebook's got premises out there. Amazon's got premises out there. And so we have a very strong suspicion that there is a lot of company and a lot of tech moving out to Austin.
Yeah.
So even though there might be areas within the broader United States that might be suffering and might have a negative outlook in 2021, we feel like Austin's going to be one of the biggest beneficiaries with a lot of companies moving to Austin because there is a significantly lower tax rate in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to really benefit the growth of real estate in that area.
Okay. Got it. And I guess while I have you on the real estate question, like, how did you get into it? Why do you do it? How do you learn about it? And what are your tips?
So, again, like I guess I learned from my mother back in the day. So we, it was just something that we started doing, when we were young and in our early 20s, we bought our first condo in Sydney, Australia. And then we paid it off and we realized at the time that, it seemed like there was a lot of development and potential growth in that area. So we purchased another condo. And I think what I've learned at this from, I guess, property investing is that, it's really, really hard to make your first purchase. Like your first purchase is really hard because it's, you know, if it's your first home, it's often really emotional. And often with your first purchase, it's your largest purchase like that you've ever made. Like up until that point, like you've never had to pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and in the Bay Area, millions of dollars for something to live in. And so that is kind of like the biggest hurdle, I think, for a lot of people. But I think the more and more you, I guess, you kind of look at real estate and once you've become a property investor and a real estate investor, you kind of just, you know, you kind of understand how the whole system works and you get comfort with it. And you've seen how it works and you might have been a beneficiary out of it. And so we've been lucky, like our property investments have done really, really well. And so like we've been comfortable with that. And so that's how, I guess, how we've learnt about property investing is from, I guess, hands-on knowledge. But we also like listen to a lot of like YouTubers, like YouTube's kind of blown up. I guess it's kind of like the video version of podcasts, but so Graham Stephan is one. He does a lot of real estate investing and he owns like 10 homes and he kind of talks you through the process. Minority Mindset, he's another guy that has done really, really well in real estate. But I think that it's when you listen to a lot of people who have done really well in real estate, you realize that like there is a potential to do really well and invest money in that area. And be successful. And how about you, Alice? Like, I know that you invest in the stock market. Tell me, what do you like? Do you kind of, like, how did you get involved in that? And what kind of decisions have you guys made around the stock market?
I think we've just always been sort of a stock family growing up, and that's what my parents did, and so that's what we do with our retirements and things like that, and so. I think my dad did a lot of sort of like individual sector funds and all that kind of thing. But my sister and I, we like to do the most simple thing, which is basically index funds of like the entire stock market. So really, I only have like three tips, which is like I go through Vanguard. My sister researched it. I think it has very low cost. And I think cost is very important for stocks. That's like a huge predictor of how well you'll do. So I get like one, like all US index fund and then one international fund without the US. And then I think you could do a one domestic bond fund and one international bond fund. And that's it. And then depending on your risk tolerance, you can decide what your levels will be and your distribution. And one thing we've actually done a little bit differently is we have less in bonds and we're actually trying to pay down our mortgage early. So that's basically it. It's very simple, doesn't take much time. We just kind of try to put things in regularly. We do dollar cost averaging. And we try not to be super emotional or psychologically bound to it. So when there's a low, we try not to sell. We try not to buy high. We just try to do it evenly. It's easier said than done. But it's very simple. It's very liquid. And it's just like a click on a computer screen. And that's why we do it. So no, but I think, you know, the stock market's really high. So we're looking into diversifying. So, but anyways, I know we're almost out of time. Was there anything else you wanted to say to our listeners or any other tips that you had?
No, I think that's been great. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Alice.
Okay.
It's been great.
Thank you so much, Daisy. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with a few friends. I have a dream to build up a strong community of Asian women, and I think the best way to do that is through word of mouth. Also, if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be awesome. Finally, come join our community on Facebook where we discuss these episodes and how to incorporate happiness into our everyday lives. Thanks and have a great week!